supports. What specific support do you see going forward in the Obama administration for family caregivers?
The president is very supportive of families, how to support families, how to support people who are working. And I know that a lot of times the caregiver issue comes up in terms of the struggle for caregivers to both stay at the job and be at home. I was very pleased that even before I got here to see the Secretary Sebelius's letter to the editor in the Washington Post in response to their magazine article talking about caregivers being the real backbone of our long-term care system. I've worked with the Secretary for a long time. I know of her real support for families, for seniors, and her support for staying at home, I mean, allowing people to stay at home for as long as they can. So I think it's a good mix.
You know, one of my favorite phrases has always been aging in place. And I was wondering what your priorities would be with regards to home and community-based long-term care.
I think my priority is it's the first approach for providing long-term care. I don't consider myself to be an anti-nursing home person at all. I've seen some wonderful models for nursing home care. But in talking to seniors and talking to their family members, I simply know that living at home, aging in place, is the preference. You know, no question. I mean, hands down, aging in place is what people want to do. It continues to keep individuals involved in their community in a way that's very important for people.
Well, and obviously you've been involved in the elder arena in Kansas for many, many years. Have you seen, you know, specific things that an administration needs to do to support aging in place? Is it education? Is it home modification? Is it, you know, what are your thoughts on those?
All of the above. I mean, I think that maybe the first place I would start in terms of what we need to do as an administration is to continue to push forward on just something as basic as information and referral. Getting the right information at the right time is critical for both a senior staying at home or the family assisting them staying at home. And I have heard, you know, tragic stories, truthfully, of individuals who found out about resources too late, meaning after their loved one had died, or after their loved one had gone to a nursing home because they didn't know there were other options. So just getting the information, and I think that's the first, you know, the line of maybe almost attack. I don't know that that's the right word. Working with the area agencies on aging, the Centers for Independent Living, our Aging and Disability Resource Centers, which really bridge between those two, and getting information out. Now, once there's information provided, we also have to follow up with good services and support, and I think that's the other place, information and services. If you can also support the caregiver in being able to come forward and both seek and accept the assistance, you know, there's a downside to a small town in that everybody else knows what you're doing.
That's right.
The upside is that everybody can be there to help. And it becomes a community a wraparound support to help people stay at home. I mean, I like small towns. I came from a small town and can see the value in them. But I think in those smaller settings, it's I'm interested in kind of what things you will cover in your Fearless Caregiver conferences that really bring up the differences in the smaller communities.
Actually, you know, one thing that we do at the events is just what you're talking about, is get the caregivers to see themselves as, you know, part of the solution. And we ask them to ask us questions. We don't really as much do speeches, but answer questions. And then what we find is very shortly is that caregivers are answering each other's questions. And they start to realize they know more than they think they do. And they start to realize that they're not the only one out there going, you know, through what they're going through. And it seems to just open the floodgates of conversation and understanding.
And the common understanding that the caregiver label is something that applies to them.
Absolutely.
I talked to one of my staff members when I was Secretary of Aging in Kansas, and she said, you know, the thing that obviously you know in here, which is I was just the wife, and not just the wife being a bad thing, but this was what I wanted to do, signed up to do, and never saw this other label as applying to me. And I think that becomes a bit of a challenge in doing outreach to caregivers. So you are a caregiver. There's things that we can do, because many people pick this up as a family responsibility quite willingly and never realize that there's other people out there and that they've moved to a different, I guess, phase mm-hmm. in their family relationship and need different kinds of support.
Talking about rural, another phrase, actually, here's one that's just kind of been presented to me, frontier communities. What are frontier communities?
The most isolated and smallest of the rural communities. In the state of Kansas, for example, we don't have a lot of urban areas, but we have a couple. We have a lot of rural areas, which are smaller towns. But when you get to the western part of Kansas, the eastern part of Colorado, parts of Wyoming, they are frontier because of their small size in terms of community, both at really the city level and the county level, but also their remoteness from any sort of metropolitan area for larger services. Everybody in the western part of Kansas goes to Denver as their primary place, and it is 3 or 4 hours away, and that really does classify as a kind of a frontier location.
So you're truly on your own.
Yeah. Yeah, so the value of community is probably as heightened there as anywhere, the smaller and smaller that you get.
You know, in one of your other previous roles, I know you were the long-term care ombudsman for the state of Kansas, and I have to tell you that's one of my favorite job titles. I just love talking to the ombudsman, but it's one of the most difficult things to explain to people. What role does an ombudsman play, and why do you think that's important for family caregivers?
Well, the ombudsman role historically has been to advocate for residents of long-term care facilities. There are some ombudsmen across the nation who are now doing some ombudsman work in the community, but primarily the ombudsman role has been to work on behalf of the residents in a skilled congregate setting. And I think the ombudsman role with regard to family caregiving, beyond supporting the resident, is to help the family through the transition from living at home to living in a nursing home. I mean, the admission process to a nursing home is overwhelming, both in terms of just learning what's the schedule here, what's the day like, what services are provided. And so much of that information takes place at a real time of trauma for the family when their loved one is moving into a nursing home. And sometimes it takes a month before everybody kind of comes back together and, like, now where are we? We've forgotten everything we were told. And the ombudsman can really assist the family. The other thing I think that's important for families of residents of nursing homes is to have support for the fact that they have not failed their loved one in any way. I mean, I don't see nursing home placement or residency as a failed outcome for not being able to provide services in the community, only the next step because of the needs and the acuity of the resident.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree with you more. You know, I have another favorite but equally misunderstood phrase that I like, and it's called respite
uh-huh.
care. And I know that funds have just been released to support the Lifespan Respite Care Program, and obviously it may be too early to talk about the specifics of that, but can you talk to caregivers about why respite is such an important tool for them.
What was the question? Can we talk to caregivers about it?
Personally, if you could share why you think respite is such an important tool for family caregivers.
Let me answer your question by starting kind of over in left field, and I'll come back.
I mean, okay.
I have testified numerous times to legislators about government services. And inevitably, at some point, the public policymakers will ask the question, well, now, where are these people's families? And you just want to say, they are the core people providing the services. Caregiving is a central family sort of responsibility, value, commitment. And what we can do to support families most is help the individuals who want to do this get a break, stay healthy, and have the ability to remain as caregivers for as long as they can. So in terms of talking about respite, you know, we have to somehow figure out how to explain to people what we're talking about. But it's a chance to continue the caregiver's life by having sufficient temporary care for the loved one so that the caregiver also can work or take a vacation or simply have some meaning in their life that's separate from their role as caregiver. There was an article in the New York Times a few weeks ago about their program for night care. It was a sort of daycare, but a night care program that I was simply fascinated by to help assist families when their residents are up, the sundowners syndrome, when people are up at night. And they interviewed multiple family members saying, you know, we just want to be able to sleep. You know, we'll do this work, but we need to sleep. So I want to talk about it. And I need to talk more directly with caregivers to understand their needs and hear their stories. But I will talk about the value of providing this service to the caregiver, really on behalf of the loved one.
I couldn't agree with you more, and it reminds me of I spoke at a event that the state of Florida put on, and it was 2 days, and they drew people from all the different area agencies into Orlando, and as I walked around asking caregivers what they thought about the value of the event, they loved it, and they loved learning, and they loved sharing, but above and beyond, they loved the fact that they actually were sleeping in a hotel, and you know, they got a full night's sleep.
Yeah. Yeah, and that program was just so fascinating to me. I mean, I have not been a caregiver myself. I'm blessed with parents who are young and healthy. But I had a grandmother with vascular dementia, and she, you know, struggled with her declining dementia for 10 years. She was always up at night. I saw that article and sent it to my mom. She's like, oh, my goodness, this would have been so helpful for our family to know that this is a common occurrence. There are ways that we can provide support to the individuals. And there's nothing wrong with the behavior. It's just the behavior of the dementia. And there's some help so people can sleep. Something that basic.
Yeah, I know. I agree with you. What changes, if any, do you see to the Older Americans Act programs going forward?
Well, I'm very supportive of the Family Caregiver Support Program that we have had since 2000, the 2000 reauthorization. I'm hoping to be able to do two different things in my tenure as the Assistant Secretary. I want to make sure that we always return to and address the core services that we're providing under the Older Americans Act, and those services are direct services to seniors, such as attendant care services, the nutrition services, the family caregiver services. I want to make sure we shore those up and have adequate resources there. But I also want to continue the innovative work that the Administration on Aging has done. And this night care program that I was just talking about catches my attention as something that's emerging and so obviously in need that I want to be able to pursue those opportunities to help bring back to the table some other types of supports that we've not provided before.
You know, it's interesting that you mentioned the night care program because it reminds me as we do travel the country and talk to caregivers, things that people know in one community and then you go to another community and even sometimes the care professionals don't know. So for to be able to share the wisdom of things that are happening successfully in different communities, I think that has to be a very exciting part of your new role.
Oh, I love learning new things. And I often will tell people when I visit, it's like, okay, I'm going to make you famous, meaning I'm going to start talking about your good works to other people. You know, and I'm glad you mentioned the providers, because the providers do this work, the paid providers that are professionals, and in order for them to continue to do it, they have to make it financially feasible. They can't just give away their services if they're in the paid part of the workforce. So this night care program, it will be interesting to talk about because you have daycare providers who then turn off the lights at 6 o'clock and go home. It's like, hey, can you hire a second shift to bring them in overnight? I mean, I think there's also, in looking at good practices for families and for seniors, the ability to go to providers and say, we need your innovations to support your innovations as well, because we need the best providers out there, and we need to work with them.
It's the partnership, you know, and we go around, we talk to another one of my favorite roles in the world is the caregiver coordinators in these different communities. They work so hard. I talked to one recently who said, you know, there were two jobs open at this area agency, and one paid twice as much, and this was the other one, and I couldn't think of doing anything but this role. And I said, okay, you are the perfect person for that job, because they're just right there in the front lines, caring for caregivers, explaining support, you know, groups, and explaining services, and I, you know, I think if, as you said, the caregivers recognize their own role and come to places where they need to get the support, the support is there.
You mentioned the Lifespan Respite Act. The other thing that I think is a bit of a challenge in looking at that act when I was in Kansas before I came here is that this is an issue that's intergenerational and creates an opportunity for us in the aging network to reach out and work with people who are providing support for individuals with developmental disabilities or physical disabilities or children. And too often, because the programs are in funding silos, the discussion of caregiver support and respite support also can be channeled in those same silos, and it doesn't have to be. And I think it's interesting to try to find some common ground through this whole notion of supporting the caregiver, whoever that caregiver is.